this accord would undermine our economy, hamstring our workers, weaken our sovereignty, impose unacceptable legal risk, and put us at a permanent disadvantage to the other countries of the world.
The new faces of a Bitcoin boom in Asia, from Japanese housewives to South Korean retirees, mom-and-pop investors have become the driving force behind the digital currency's sudden sweeping surge. Some investor advocacy groups are advising people against trading in Bitcoin because of the very volatility that makes it attractive. There's also the problem of scams and pyramid schemes encouraging people to buy into Bitcoin.
Can the European Union ever become really stable unless there's a common fiscal policy as well as a common monetary policy?
At the end of the day, we will probably need both, but I like quite a few of the ideas there. For instance, a European finance minister, I think that's what we should have and that's what we will end up with.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is June 2nd, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. I'm glad you're here for our Friday edition of the show. Last business day of the week. It was kind of a short week, wasn't it? Especially if you had Monday off. Seemed like the week went by really, really fast. Coming up on the show today, we've got lots to talk about. Later in the show, we'll bring in Rick Cini, like we always do on Friday, from faircompare.com. Maybe we'll find a few cheap airfares for you if you're still planning an early summer vacation. And we'll talk a little bit about the latest outage for airlines and what that meant for overseas travelers and whether or not those problems have been fixed going forward. In a minute, we'll bring in Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management, and we'll check over our portfolios as we do every Friday, talk a little bit about the economy. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Asian stock markets rallied as investors' sentiment was boosted by signs of continued improvement in the U.S. job market. Tokyo stocks jumped to the highest level in nearly 2 years. This morning, as we check the big board, the Nikkei up almost 1.5%, 317 points. The Hang Seng up about 0.5%, and the Asian Dow up almost 1% as well. Looking over to Europe this morning, markets generally higher. The DAX is up almost 1.5%. The FTSE's up just about 0.25%. The CAC is up 47 points, almost 1% there as well. Oil is trading down almost 3% at $46.91 a barrel. Gold and silver are generally flat this morning. Some other stories we're watching for you. Paris Climate Accord reaction after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of it yesterday. President Trump facing varying degrees of criticism from world leaders. After making that decision yesterday, they're pledging to keep fighting against global warming with or without the U.S. The European Union's top climate change official says that Trump's decision to leave the Paris Accord is a sad day for the global community, adding that the area of the European Union deeply regrets the unilateral decision. The three Democratic governors say they won't let the U.S. back away from global commitments to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Despite President Trump's withdrawing yesterday, Jerry Brown of California, Jay Inslee of Washington State, Andrew Cuomo of New York have formed U.S. Climate Alliance to uphold the Paris Agreement. We've also seen the first two defections from the president's economic councils as promised. Elon Musk, the head of SpaceX, has pulled out. Bob Iger of Disney has also pulled out of the president's economic councils in reaction to yesterday's decision on the Paris Accord. We thought we'd start there this morning with Paul Nolte. He's a senior portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, and he's with us this morning as he is every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again. Nice. Welcome to summer.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be a nice summer weekend this weekend. So let's talk about weather a little bit here with this Paris Climate Accord, the economic impact. What is we heard yesterday the president saying that he was sparing the country losing jobs if we stayed in this agreement. We're trying to figure out what is real, what's accurate, what's not. How would this have impacted the economy, if at all?
You know, it's going to be interesting, and it's, again, multi-layered as anything when we talk about the global economy and even the U.S. economy goes. If we take a look at what has been put out by the Department of Energy and we look at employment and growth in general, we're seeing a lot of growth in solar, wind, geothermal to a much lesser extent, and it's going at a much faster rate than the fossil fuel industry, the coal industry. And what we've seen, too, is over the last 3 or 4 years, that transition has gone on with or without the Paris Accord. Much like healthcare and trying to redo the healthcare program, a lot of things are already in place and things are moving in that direction. We're seeing a lot more efficient cars on the road. We're seeing a lot more in wind energy and solar panels being put up. And surprisingly enough, one of the major beneficiaries of the Paris Accord is really not necessarily the U.S., but China, because they're the big manufacturers of a lot of solar panels. They export a ton to Europe at this point. So there are a lot of opportunities within the manufacturing sector and a lot of the ancillary businesses around that in building out our infrastructure. And a lot of that's already in place and has been growing over the last couple of years, even before we got to the Paris Accord.
Yeah, and the number of jobs, too, that clean energy is creating. We found in the New York Times this morning, they have put together some numbers. In 2016 alone, 1.9 million jobs, power creation jobs generally, 373,000 in solar, it's 101,000 in wind, nearly 70,000 in hydroelectric. Coal in 2016 created about 160,000 jobs. Natural gas, 398,000. Oil, 515,000. So the solar jobs especially, that's a lot of jobs created.
It is. And again, you know, I haven't been able to parse through all the data to figure out, you know, if those are direct jobs to solar or a lot of the ancillary positions when you're talking about, you know, efficient windows, buildings, et cetera, and manufacturing. Or as an installation, et cetera. So there's a lot of softness around some of those numbers, but as you mentioned, they are significantly better. We've seen a diminishing in coal use. It's gotten more expensive to generate electric power that way because natural gas has come on so strong. Again, we still have some of the problems of storage. How do you store all of that energy? We're getting a little bit better with that. So we're looking at the battery manufacturing, lithium ion, among others, to solve some of the storage problems. And if we can do that, we can move much more aggressively toward the solar and wind power.
Well, as we talk about jobs, it's a good segue into Friday today, the jobs report, big employment day. Numbers coming out later this morning. What do we expect?
We're looking at probably somewhere in the 175 to 200 range. The report last month was well over 200, and the unemployment rate still around that 4.4 level. The ADP report that came out yesterday was much, much bigger than expected, and I think led to the market rise yesterday. Again, as always, we're looking at wage growth. We want to see that wages are growing at a healthy clip. We're probably in the 2.5% range, which is still okay, but still at the lower end of historical ranges. But I think either way, the Fed goes ahead and raises interest rates later this month, whether the report is much better than expected or even surprisingly worse than expected.
All right, Paul, hang on. We're going to take a break here. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program, 523. We're on this morning with Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Paul had a little brain aneurysm just then. My mother, whenever she talks about tortillas, she says tortilla. That's where that comes from. So I don't know why I was thinking about that this morning, but delicious nonetheless. Paul, we had a couple of economic reports this week, including manufacturing. I know you thought that was a pretty decent report, but a surprise there.
There was in the prices paid. So what we're seeing in what inflation is coming through the system, as it were, when we take a look at what manufacturers are paying for various inputs, so whether it's iron, energy, et cetera, that's going into the manufacturing process, we're seeing some of those prices come off. We're seeing that in a lot of other areas. As a matter of fact, this morning, if you look at crude oil, it's down 3%. It's down to under $47 a barrel. So a lot of the commodity prices we're seeing coming down, it's a leading indicator for inflation coming into the system. And those have generally been weak. So when we look at going back to the Fed, when we talk about the employment report and their dual mandate of stable prices and full employment, we have generally the one mandate covered, full employment. Stable prices we do have, but we're looking at maybe a little bit lower inflation, which should give the Fed reason to pause if it persists.
The other report this week, too, we saw U.S. construction fell by about 1.5%. We're still seeing that weakness in home building and construction, aren't we?
We are, and in that respect, you're looking at, again, very a tight labor market, looking for people to come into that area. We're also seeing not as much demand. Housing prices have come up some, and there has been a shift in the types of construction. So a lot of it has been more multifamily than single home. And so that mix has changed a little bit. So there has been some growth there. It's not yet enough to pick up those looking for homes. And it has, to a certain extent, the higher home prices priced out some of the home buyers that are first coming into that market. So that's part of the slowdown that we're seeing in the housing market.
And a question for you about yesterday, S&P lowered the state's credit rating again after the failure of the budget agreement that's impacting bonds issued by the Illinois Sports Facility Authority and the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, the folks who run Navy Pier and McCormick Place. Whenever that happens, do investors who have these bonds know this immediately, or how does it impact our portfolio?
When you take a look at the municipal bond market, and we talked about this in the office actually a little bit yesterday, it's highly unlikely that you're going to see a default by the state of Illinois. We've yet to see a state default. We've seen some municipalities default over the last couple decades, but we probably will not see the state default on their bonds. But it increases the costs of borrowing. What that does for holders, current holders of bonds, those bond prices decline a little bit, not a huge amount, as long as there's funds to pay the interest and then pay the principal off when they come due. But it certainly affects new issues. So whenever they come to market, maybe to replace those bonds when they mature, the various entities that you talk about are going to have to pay a much higher interest rate going forward. And again, from an investor's perspective, we tend to steer clear of a lot of those municipalities, whether it's state or local, that have those funding issues or problems that we're a little concerned about as far as paying interest and principal on a timely basis.
All right. Paul, you have big weekends for this nice summer weekend?
I do, and actually it won't be in Chicago. We're going to be traveling to North Carolina, visit my folks for a while, and visit some clients that are out in the North Carolina area. But it's supposed to be very nice out there as well, so looking forward to a little travel this week.
Well, have a safe trip, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
From ABC News Tech Trends, a new way to check in for that flight. JetBlue is testing a facial recognition system that can be used to speed things up at the check-in counter. ABC's David Curley explains what happens once the system captures your image.
Then that face, that data, is then moved into the queries into the database of, for us, the Customs and Border Protection folks, to match the picture at the counter and the picture on your passport. Get a match, you get to get on the plane.
That means shorter lines and creating what JetBlue refers to as friction points.
The whole idea of all this biometric stuff is to actually identify you quicker so you don't have to look for that boarding pass. You don't have to pull out your phone.
The testing begins this month.
The problem is for JetBlue, it's only one flight right now. It's from Boston to Aruba.
Similarly, Delta Airlines is testing out a new fingerprint system and recently launched self-service bag drops.
Do not leave baggage or other items unattended.
With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. United Airlines announced yesterday it'll start flying between Los Angeles and Singapore. That's a distance of about 8,700 miles, and that'll make it the longest route to or from the United States. Westbound flights will be a derriere-numbing 17 hours and 55 minutes long. They will leave Los Angeles each evening, arrive 2 days later, local time, in Singapore. The eastbound leg will take about 15 hours and 15 minutes with prevailing tailwind. The airline says it's assuming it will get government approval for the flights, which will start October 27th using the Boeing 787 Dreamliner aircraft. Well, we're still doing the postmortem on the British Airways failure over this past weekend at Heathrow Airport and other airports in the UK, blamed on a power failure. We thought we'd bring in Rick Sina to talk a little bit about this and other travel news this morning. Rick is the co-founder, founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas. Rick, we're still doing the, as I mentioned, the postmortem on this event, but it sounds awfully familiar, a power outage and lots of long delays.
Well, I think a couple different things. In fact, I was actually helping my neighbor whose 20-year-old daughter was taking their first trip to Europe that was stuck in London Heathrow on Saturday. So I'm quite familiar with what was happening there. They actually locked people out on Sunday, only allowed people within 90 minutes of their departure into the actual airport itself. So it was pretty crazy there. But essentially, I think you have three or four things happening. You have a lot of consolidation that's occurred over the last 5 or 6 years, mergers occurring, old rickety systems patched together. You had an airline, a set of airlines that basically didn't have a whole lot of capital the last 15 years other than the last 2 or 3 years. You take all that, mix it up, make it a little more complicated, and you're going to have IT infrastructure problems if you don't start putting more money and time and effort into those things. And this is outside potential hacking and cyber threats as well. This is sort of shooting yourself in the foot in some cases.
This is the second time in a year or so that this has happened to British Airways. We saw it happen in this country as well, all of them with the same sort of scenario. It made the conspiracy theorist in me think, was this something other than a power failure?
It's hard to say. You know, in the British newspapers, they're complaining that British Airways a few years ago outsourced IT to India, for example, and that was one reason they're stating over there. There's a lot of conspiracy theories. I think a lot of times, and I'm a computer scientist, all it takes is one sort of key piece of infrastructure to have an issue that nobody really knew about, and the person that actually knew about it no longer works for the company, and it can cause all sorts of cascading issues to occur. So I don't doubt that there's some sort of either networking gear failure or power gear failure, and when that happens, it cascades throughout the network.
Yeah, and we've been talking about time and time again here, too, about how, and you mentioned it earlier, this infrastructure, all of these airlines really need to do a better job in upgrading all this stuff.
Yeah, and it's extremely expensive. It's time-consuming to do that, but it's something they clearly have to do. If you're only going to have four airlines that control over 80% of traffic, those airlines have to be rock solid.
You seeing any anecdotal information yet about this past holiday weekend, how the airports in this country did?
Yeah, no, there was a lot of traffic flowing through on Memorial Day. Looks like I just noticed that they were putting out that this says they're going to have another record summer with another 20 million passengers additional over last year in the 234 million range. It's going to be a busy summer. Looks like TSA did fine. Average wait time somewhere around 10 minutes to 11 minutes. That's pretty darn good. So look, I mean, they've addressed some of the issues they had at the tail end of last May, especially in Chicago.
One of the other stories in the headlines this week is this laptop ban. Again, back in the news that it may actually be implemented after all, even though we thought maybe it wasn't. You hearing anything about this?
Well, I've heard sort of multiple stories. Kelly said that he may do it across all flights. He doesn't really know. They're being kind of coy about when they're going to do it, where they're going to do it. But essentially, it's going to hurt airlines if they ban laptops and large electronics, because it's just going to have fewer business travelers traveling when they can't use their electronics and their laptop to do work on a 10, 11-hour flight.
We've seen this already in place on some flights from the Middle East. Have you heard anything about how those companies are doing?
In some cases, Emirates is down 25-30% in some of those routes that were part of that. So clearly it has an effect on people's pattern of actual flying.
We saw that flight, the United flight with the doctor dragged off of it. We probably wouldn't have seen all about that had it not been for people taking video. And you found some information that people who recorded this actually broke the rules.
Yeah, so AP published a story last week that caught my eye was that actually the rule, at least for the major airlines, the four major airlines, American, Delta, United, Southwest, all have a policy that says on the aircraft you cannot use either photography or video except for your own personal events with either customers or staff member without their consent. And if so, you're subject to being ejected from the flight.
Wow.
And so my question is the 2 million passengers that fly each day, all of them whipping out their cell phones, clearly they're not enforcing the policy at the moment.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if that rule had been enforced, whether we would have even known about Dr. David Dow.
Absolutely. And the ironic thing is TSA at the security entrances say, go ahead, all the selfies you want, all the video you want.
Yeah.
So it's only in the aircraft. Now, I've seen a bunch of legal opinions saying if you're out in the airport and a variety of other places, there's no right to privacy. But apparently, once you're in the aircraft, it's private property. They can set the rules.
Last week at the United Shareholders meeting, Oscar Munoz got to keep his job. Shareholders seemed upset. What's the continuing fallout going to be of all of this, do you think?
Well, look, I think, you know, in all these particular cases, when you have these blow-ups that occur, it just highlights the fact that they're not putting enough money in it in a quick enough pace in certain areas. You know, I think he was pretty lucky to keep his job in that particular case, because usually they need somebody to fall on their sword in these particular instances. I think the CEO of British Airways is probably waiting to find that sword somewhere over the weekend with their issues. So, look, it's unfortunately bad things have to happen for people to react in some cases.
Well, get us out of town, Rick. I know we just got back from Memorial Day, but are there any deals to be had going forward?
Yeah, so I was actually looking at the tail end of June. The window for sort of mid-June is starting to close with a 14-day advance purchase mark. But there's still great deals. If you're heading to the Northwest, you have Portland at $225 round trip, Seattle about $40 more. If you're heading out to the West Coast, Los Angeles is about 15 to 20% cheaper than San Francisco at $190 round trip. If you want to go to South Florida before it gets too warm down there, Miami is in the $200 range round trip. Orlando a little bit further north there at the $200 range. If you're heading out to the Northeast, your best bet is New York City and Washington, D.C. on some of those ultra low cost airlines in the low 120s, on the legacy carriers about 170 or so.
That sounds good. Make sure you keep those video cameras in your pockets.
Well, look, I think here's the deal. When you're there and you actually have a person you're interacting with a flight attendant or something, and they start to get upset, if you want to make it home for dinner, it's probably worthwhile to drop your phone and not try to take a picture of their badge or their face.
All right. Rick, happy travels.
Thanks.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com out of Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini at FareCompare. Is the Twitter handle for FareCompare. Again, FareCompare.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 549 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This morning, Dow futures are up 76 points. And NASDAQ and S&P futures are pointing higher, too. Looks like a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Gold and silver are lower. We're still concerned about oil this morning, off almost 3%, $47.05 a barrel. Latest now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, and I hope you've made plans to go to a June Dairy Month breakfast on the farm. Have you done that yet?
I have not yet, but, you know, we talked about this last year, too. This is one of those things that's on my bucket list.
Okay. Well, I'll be back in the Midwest come June 13th, and I know there'll be enough dairy breakfasts on the farm that I can find one that's fairly close for you.
That would be great. I would love to do that.
Okay. Yesterday, markets, my golly, the cattle market once again has had a limit up gain, both in feeder cattle and in live cattle, fueled by short covering following stronger than expected cash prices. Cash cattle on Thursday in the plains brought $135 to $137 per hundredweight. Meanwhile, on the other livestock at the Mercantile Exchange, hog futures lower profit-taking and a lower cash hog price in the dressed pork trade. Grain market yesterday, we saw red winter wheat futures in Kansas City, hard red winter futures dropping to two-week lows. Forecasts for dry conditions in key growing areas raised the prospect of a quick start to harvest for both of those crops. And as Vince mentioned on the 5:30 news this morning, tragedy in Wisconsin on Wednesday night of this week. And yesterday, recovery workers in Wisconsin were searching for two missing people after an explosion and a fire at a corn milling plant killed at least one person. And initially, they're saying about 16 people were injured as well. So they've been transported by helicopter or ambulance to hospitals. And that's the first milling plant explosion we've seen in quite a while. We went through a rash of them several years ago when we seemed to clean up the explosive dust, and so we haven't had one since. So on to happier things. Harvard, Illinois, about 65 miles northwest of Chicago, up in McHenry County. It is Harvard Milk Day time, and it starts today. It goes through Sunday, and the big parade down the Milky Way, they actually whitewash their main street through the business section, and so it's the Milky Way. And this is the longest-running community festival in the state of Illinois. Been there many times, and we'll miss it this year, but it's a great salute to the dairy industry. So that's coming up and continuing through Sunday.
And I would imagine you could find all kinds of dairy goods there, too, right, to try?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, it has grown to the point where they now have their own grounds. And they used to set up in the high school yard and that sort of thing. But they now have Milk Day grounds, and they'll have a carnival, and they'll have the fun stuff you usually do. And, yeah, there'll be a lot of moo stuff from the dairy cows as well.
You mentioned the farmer's breakfast earlier, Orion. This is something that everybody can do, can't they? I mean, just find a farm and go.
Yeah, open to the public, and generally, if you go to the website of your State Department of Agriculture, of course, Wisconsin being the dairy state, they have about 70 of these during the month of June, but we have some in Illinois and other states that have them. If you go to the website of the State Departments of Agriculture, there'll generally be a schedule on there where they are and when they are.
So any news out of the Department of Agriculture in Washington? Last we chatted with you, the NAFTA agreement was going to be open for renegotiation. There were concerns about other things. How's Sonny Perdue doing?
Sonny Perdue, I think, is doing quite well. As a matter of fact, he has been very active. And today he will be in Boise, Idaho, along with the Secretary of the Interior. And they'll be talking about management of forests, because the biggest division in the Department of Agriculture is the U.S. Forest Service. And having been here in Arizona since February, I can tell you we've already, in the state of Arizona, had 60 wildfires that they've had to fight and put out, and that have burned a lot of acres. So Sonny Perdue will be in Boise, Idaho today, and they'll be talking about what can be done to prevent these catastrophes, because buildings get burned, and, of course, forests, you know, trees are like a corn crop. They do mature. Corn does it in the summer, but trees do it in 50, 60 years, and sometime you have to burn off the brush and the trees, and that brings new growth into the forest. Because we before we were here in North America, this happened all the time. Nobody to put the fires out, and they would burn, and then they would start growing again. So, but it is a problem, and so many of these fires are man-made carelessness, throwing a cigarette out the window or not putting your campfire out when you think it's out. So they're going to be working on that with a plan today in Boise. But so far, I like what Sonny Perdue is doing. I think he's getting into it very quickly. And he's gone everywhere from FFA gatherings to the type of meeting he's going to today in Boise. So I think Sonny will do okay. I haven't met him, but Max Armstrong, who spent some time with him, said, yeah, pretty folksy guy, good guy.
Very nice. Okay, Orion, we'll have a great weekend. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve.
Maureen Samuelson with us today. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today. Of course, the big jobs report's coming. It is the Labor Department release of employment data for May and for also income data in that report as well. The Commerce Department releases international trade data for April. Many analysts say that 179,000 jobs likely created in May, the unemployment rate likely to stay at 4.4%. Again, the trade data comes out as well. The monthly report for April expected to show the U.S. continue to import more than it exports, leading to a trade gap of about $44 billion in the month. It is also National Donut Day. You could head over to your local donut store, Dunkin' Donuts. You can buy, get a free donut with a coffee. And at Krispy Kreme, everybody gets a free donut as well. National Donut Day. And it is National Gun Violence Awareness Day, established by a coalition of organizers, cultural influencers, and community members and activists, part of the Wear Orange campaign, raising awareness of gun violence. Lots of events happening today, including right here in Chicago. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, June 2nd, 2017.